Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to this gorgeous, gorgeous day on birthday week slash NFL review, NFL draft review week slash, I guess there was an NBA and NHL playoffs slash, well, I guess the other big event of the week. Good afternoon, Mr. Palmer.
Hello, and welcome to our NFL draft review, where, surprise, surprise, Mr. Kamens did not do as poorly as he thought.
Really?
You didn't. I was shocked when I
added up
all the scores. So I added up all the scores, and we'll do this first and get it out of the way, because I think this is kind of important to what we normally do is we normally run contests and never tell people who won. So this time, we're going to tell people who won. And this was just between Seth and myself. But I did compare us to the illustrious Todd McShay and to Mel Kiper of ESPN. And, Mr. Kamens, you came in third.
That's not terrible, considering I thought I would have been much, much worse. I think I got 3 out of 32 exact. I got Ziggy Ansah going to Detroit. I got Chance Womack going to Tennessee. Bjorn Warner going to Indy. So
I think that's all that you got absolutely correct. That is true. But you did get a couple of fours. Now, to replay the rules are that if you get it spot on, you get 5. And if you get it within one spot, you get 4, all the way down to 1 point. So if you get it within 5 spots, you get a point. That's basically the up or down. This is not Price is Right rules. Up or down does not matter. So the results, if you please. Coming in first this year, Mel Kiper with 62 points. Now, Mel Kiper got no points in the last 5 picks. 0. He finished with 62. Coming in second is myself with 61.
Oh.
And I have to tell you, this is how I got to 61. I got 4 points on the last pick of the draft. And the reason why I got 4 points on the last pick of the draft is I got the first pick of the second round. Jonathan Crippian of, I think it was Florida International, went first in the second round, and I had him 32nd overall. So I will take some credit there. So 61 for me. Now, this is revenge for Mel, because I beat Mel by a lot last year. So congratulations to Mel for beating me for once. In third place, Mr. Kamens with 55 points. And he made up for the lack of perfection by getting a lot of fours, including Matt Elam with the 31st pick in the draft. He picked Zach Eifert with the 22nd pick in the draft. He picked Richardson, one pick away. He had Fluker, one pick away. He had the first 2 picks of the draft. He picked Deion Jordan with the 2nd pick, which nobody except McShay had that as well. And he did get Ziggy. So he had a couple. And then McShay, who had a lot of spot-ons, but not much else. I mean, remember, he's the guy that picked Ryan Nassib and Geno Smith in the first 10 picks, along with Zach Eifert. He had a startling 53 points. So you beat McShay by 2 points. And he also had Matt Elam with the second, except he had him second to last. So he got him spot-on.
That does make me feel a little bit better.
So there you go. So, Mel, congratulations from all of us at Seth and Sean Sports. You have won. Yay. But
does this mean Mel gets to co-host our show for an hour?
Sure. He's more than welcome. Among the misses, all 4 of us had Sharif Floyd going 3rd overall.
Yeah, we're off by 20 on that.
We were all off by 20 on that.
Yep.
Let's see where else. with the ninth pick of the draft, which was Tavon Austin, I was one pick off. You were five picks off. Mel was one pick off, and the chair was like 86 picks off. If he had Ryan Nassib there. Other zeros across the board. Let's see if there are any other zeros. Here we go. So the Bears picked Howie Long's son, where I had Monte Teo. You had Zach Eifert. Oh, you were 1 point off. You had Eifert. And Mel and McShay both had Teo. We all had Lacy. No, you did not. Three of us had Lacy going in the first round. And he did not go until the late second. Were there any other zeros across the board? Yes, here
we go. Eric Reed. I was one or two off. I don't think you had him going in the first round.
You were four off for Eric Reed.
I'm still impressed I was that close.
You were four off. And you were the only person. Actually, Mel and McShay both had him going 31st overall. So well done. You actually
Thank
had
you,
him
sir.
Going to the right team. They just traded up for him.
No.
Yeah, I know. You had him going to the right team. Congrats on that. But they traded up for him.
For those listening, I sent a text to Sean about 9:30 on Thursday night, about 10 picks in, saying I concede because I didn't get a single point for Eric Fisher going number one. I didn't get a single point for number three. I forget who number four was. I may not have gotten more than a point or two for Lane Johnson going number four.
You didn't get a point for four, five, seven, eight, 15, 16, 17, 21, 23, 25, wait, we're not done, 28, 29, 30, and 32. You had a lot of zeros on the board, but you also had quite a number of fours. Like, you came right off the board. I mean, you had one, two, three, four, five fours. So you made up a lot there.
Well, anyway, so as usual, Mr. Palmer wins our head-to-head. Now, the bigger question and the more important question for him, did the Jets win in this draft? Now, my thoughts, what are yours?
Well, my thoughts are that I think they came away and I was very, very disappointed with their second first-round pick being Richardson. I think that they tried to trade the pick. I think they were unsuccessful. And that's the one thing. It was funny. My colleagues at work and I, who are also Jets fans, went through the draft today to see when the last time the Jets traded down in the first round. Do you have any idea when that was?
No, I don't.
15 years ago, when the Jets traded the first pick in the draft overall, who became Orlando Pace, for James Farrier. And we know how that worked out. Orlando Pace may be a Hall of Famer, probably will be a Hall of Famer. James Farrier was a good linebacker, but no Orlando Pace. So when it came time for the 14th pick and they tried to trade, and I was like, all right, well, if you're the Jets, are you going to go for the average guy who may push the pile, who'll replace Sue Puha, who I love the name, but Sue Puha or Mike DeVito, and that's what they did do, or do they go for the riskier pick and try a Zach Eifert, which is what I had preferred? Now, of course, the Jets decide to take the safe pick in the first round and then go for the incredibly risky second-round pick. If they had taken Geno Smith in the first round, I probably would have thrown up all over my apartment and disclaimed my my loyalties to the Jets. That's how much I would have disliked the pick. The second-round pick, I came close to throwing up all over the bar. But then I thought about it a little bit more, and I was like, you know what, good value. good value. So I don't mind the way that the Jets went with Geno Smith. I mind if Mark Sanchez is still on the team and they got rid of one of their quarterbacks, say, by releasing God's Gift. Oh, sorry. Is he really good? Well, maybe. Tim Tebow. They released him this morning and paid the Broncos for the right to release him $1.5 million. And the hits just keep on coming. So, I don't know. What do you think about the Giants? The Giants pick up two Syracuse alums in Justin Pugh, who can play every position along the line, and Ryan Nassib, the heir apparent to one Eli Manning.
Yeah, I've decided that there are certain teams you just don't really question their draft. They've earned their stripes. The Giants are one of them. Would I have liked to have seen the Giants take Arthur Brown in the second round, the linebacker from Kansas State, over Jonathan Hankins? Yes. They have, even losing OC, they have enormous depth at defensive line. We don't know what Marvin Austin can do when Will Joseph is becoming a star. You know, they have JPP, they have Kiwanuka. They drafted Demonte David, who about 2 months ago was a top five pick. Or DeMonte in the third round from Texas A&M. I don't mind the Pugh pick. It is a Giants kind of pick. As I said, I would have preferred a linebacker in the second round. I don't mind Nassib in the fourth. I kind of compare it in a lot of ways to the Kirk Cousins pick last year, where you develop him for a couple of years, and if he's the heir apparent, great. If not, you trade him for a second round pick in a year or two. And if he's one of the above, then you wasted a fourth-round pick. That's life.
Well, are the Giants, I mean, they've talked about moving Kiwanuka back to the defensive end spot. But I think it's a great luxury to have him as a linebacker. So, I mean, they drafted a couple of defensive linemen, which is what the Giants generally do. Is there a possibility, instead of drafting a linebacker, they just said, you know what, we got a pretty good one. I know we want to move him back to defensive end, but he wouldn't be bad just staying where he is.
Well, I don't know I think he's best suited for defensive end. If they keep him at linebacker, they keep him at linebacker. They brought in a bunch of players, Mike Patterson, Dan Connor, but those are more inside guys. I don't know what they're going to do. I didn't love the Pugh pick. I thought it was, but it is a Giant. He is a Giants kind of pick. I don't have a real argument. I spoke with you about this earlier in the week. I was not a fan of the Jets draft at all. I did like D. Milner at 9. I thought it was very reasonable, especially with Tavon Austin going 8th. I don't really see the need Sheldon Richardson. They have a decent defensive line already. There are more needs at this point. And what I think has to exasperate Rex Ryan is, for all intents and purposes, he's a year away from being fired. I think even the biggest Ryan advocate agrees with that. And he got no offensive help. No running back. I mean, you did trade for Chris Ivory, which was nice. You have the worst wide receivers possibly in the league. You have no tight end. And you drafted a quarterback who I don't think, A, will fit what Rex Ryan wants to do, and B, I don't know if he can play in this kind of weather.
Well, let's remember that it's not what Rex Ryan wants to do anymore. I mean, that's even more to the point. I mean, Morgan-Wegg's offense.
But in my mind, but it's Rex Ryan's team. And if you're going to fight, you know, this pretty much, in my mind, kind of, okay, that there is no way Ryan's going to survive after this year. They didn't get him running back help. They didn't get line help. They didn't get tight.
But they did get running back help. They did get running back help.
I apologize. They got running back help with Chris Ivory. They didn't get wide receiver help. They didn't get tight end help. They didn't really get offensive line help. This is now an offensive league, and they may be the worst offensive team in the NFL. And I think it's going to be an ugly year.
think they were the worst offensive team before this draft. I don't think that there was that. Do I think that they helped each other? Probably not. But I don't think, unless you got the first four picks in the draft, who were two offensive linemen, a defensive lineman, and another offensive lineman, were there any players in this draft that really could have turned around the team anyway, offensively? I don't see them. I mean, Tavon Austin would have been nice, but then you would have had three wideouts all under 6 feet tall.
You'd have three Smurfs.
Right.
My feeling is they would have been better off trading. My feeling is they would have been better off trading back again, if possible.
Oh, absolutely. I don't think anybody begrudges that. I think the fact that they tried to do that and they couldn't do it. They were asking for too much.
I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah, well, the end of the day is if you were going this position, you know, I don't know if there's a significant difference, and I'm not a scout, between Sylvester, the nose tackle from North Carolina, the defensive tackle from North Carolina, or Sheldon Richardson, the Jets' second pick, the defensive tackle from Missouri. You probably could have, there are a bunch of wideouts in that late first round, DeAndre Hopkins, Patterson, the two from Tennessee, Cordell Patterson and Justin Hunter. There were some big receivers that could have been helpful. Tyler Eifert obviously would have been well, or even getting someone like a Zach Ertz from Stanford. When you have the worst offense in the league and you really don't do anything to help it, I'm not sure how you can call it a successful draft.
Well, but here's the problem I have with your connotation of not helping it. They got much better on the offensive line. They did. And if you're going to be a running team, which the Jets want to be, even with Geno Smith, they're probably still going to want to be a running team. That's where you – I think the misconception is that you can change your entire team with one draft. You can't.
Well, I'm trying
the Jets
to.
Were gonna,
what offense?
The Jets
what
were gonna stink anyway?
Where was the huge offensive line help?
In rounds 3, 4, and 5. Sorry, 3, 5, and 6.
No, we don't know. You know, these aren't bona fide stars here. We don't. You know, this isn't Joko or Fisher. We don't know what we're getting.
No, agree, but they're not Tony Mandarich either. I mean, offensive linemen, you never really know. Look, I'm not saying, was there an offensive lineman where they were drafting? No. So the question is, where do you go with that? I already acknowledge the fact that they probably shouldn't have taken Richardson, but I don't think Dee Milner was a bad pick. I think if you're the Jets, at this point, you have to say, we have to win with defense because we're not going to win with offense. So we try and make our defense as good as we can. Milner and Richardson, the Jets do not have inside interior linemen. They traded them. They didn't trade them away. They lost them. One being Pioha, something like that. Pioha. He got hurt all last year. DeVito left as a free agent. So you have an opening in the middle of the line. Look, I'm not saying the Jets are going to be good. In fact, I don't think they're going to be better than 4-12. But the fact of the matter is, no team turns around in one draft an entire team. It just doesn't happen. So I guess we'll see. Did I like the Giants draft? I did. Did I like the Ravens draft? I did. Did I love the Patriots draft? Of course I love the Patriots draft. Because Bill Belichick did everything that the Jets don't do, which is trade down and accumulate picks. I loved what the Niners did. They went up and got Eric Reed, a guy that they wanted. I loved what the Rams did. They wanted Tavon Austin. They went up and got him. The Jets didn't see somebody to go up and get, and quite frankly, they're not at that echelon where they can go and do that. They're not one player away. They're not going to be a good team, but I don't think that they're any worse than they were going into the draft.
Fair enough. So your favorites were?
My favorite picks?
Who do you think did the
you're
best?
Asking for my favorite picks in general or my value picks? Or what are you looking for here?
What teams did you think did the best when it was all said and done?
Well, I think the Rams did very well.
I think they got Tavon Austin, which I think will do them very well. I love what the Bengals did. And, yes, I just said the Bengals, getting Tyler Eifert in the first round to go with Jermaine Gresham, because and they have Mohamed Sanu at the wideout. That's going to be a great offensive team. I mean, A.J. Green needs some help. Guess what? You just got it for him. I think that was a tremendous pick. I'm a little concerned about Werner, who you picked flat on going to Indy. Just a little concerned. And I love the pick of D.J. Hayden for the Raiders if he's healthy. And that's a big if. And I love what Minnesota did, but when you have three first-round picks, it's kind of hard not to love it.
Yeah, they needed someone, obviously, to replace Percy Harvin. They went for, this is a team that years back went for Randy Moss. It certainly worked out. Going for Cordell Patterson, kind of a similar risk. And, hopefully for Minnesota it does. I agree with you. I'm a big fan of Cincinnati's draft. This team, they're not the Bungles no more. Getting Gio Bernard, who is their number one running back in the second round, Tyler Eifert in the first. And as you said, this is now Cincinnati with a team that defensively was very solid and offensively was a bit suspect outside of A.J. Green. With that now in place, Baltimore rebuilding. Pittsburgh is old. Now, this could be a very good year for Cincinnati going forward.
I did like Pittsburgh's draft, though. I mean, I liked them for a lot of reasons. One of them is getting Shamko Thomas out of Syracuse in the fourth round. And I think the fact that Cleveland traded them the pick to go get him is an interesting side plot for anything that goes on. Shamko Thomas is going to be groomed to replace Troy Polamalu. He is a 5'9 guy that reminds me of Bob Sanders. So I think that'll be just interesting going down the hill.
All right. Time to go, I guess, a little bit to the playoffs. The NBA is done with one exception. Was there anything else you want to hit on in regards to the NFL draft?
No. I think you covered it all, my friend. You covered it all.
Thank you. So, at the beginning of the year, we were trying to figure out what team I'm supposed to root for. And that has been an issue because, I'm a Nets fan. Or I was a Nets fan, except that the Nets are no longer. What did you say?
You should have stayed there.
Yeah. So, and by nature, I can't be a Knicks fan because I just can't. So what am I looking at here? And so this year I was given the Milwaukee Bucks. Thanks to the Back Sports Page poll. Ran the Seth and Sean poll, I should say, off of backsportspage.com, that I was given the Milwaukee Bucks. Not the most exciting team in the NFL, nor in the NBA. Nor in the NBA. I'm allowed a five second correction rule. Going into this playoffs, it's like, who can I really root for? What team do I want to enjoy? What team do I enjoy watching? Well, there is no more enjoyable team to watch than the Golden State Warriors, and there is no player more enjoyable to watch than Stephon Curry. That man his shooting is, he is the most beautiful shooting touch I think I've ever seen. He has led the team to a 3-1 lead, even without David Lee. And it looks Denver, hasn't even played badly. They can't stop Stephon Curry.
We totally messed that one up, by the way.
No, you picked Golden State.
Did I? Oh,
yes.
I thought I picked Denver. It's possible. All right, goody for me.
Everything else,
But I would like to say one thing. Do you agree with Mark Jackson's comments this week? Mark Jackson said he has never seen a better shooting backcourt than the one that he has now. Not that he hasn't seen. There has never been.
Well, Mark Jackson's a little prone to hyperbole.
Agreed.
So I would I didn't know he said that, but considering I can't even think who, considering they traded Mike Ellis, who the other guard is.
Oh, it's Klay Thompson.
Well, Klay Thompson, well, he's strictly a shooter. That's all he does. I thought he was actually
right.
Sixth man. I thought he was the sixth man.
No, the sixth man is Jared Jack,
who actually carried them to one of their wins. I don't know. I'd have to think about it. I mean, when you think of the great shooters, you know, did Ray Allen play with any great shooters? Not really. Did Reggie Miller? Not a point guard anyway. Larry Bird was a forward. I'd have to think about it. But, you know, that's a pretty high accolade to put on, you know, a team that never won, you know, that's never won a play, that hasn't won a playoff series in 20 years.
Well, remember, he's not putting it on the team. He's putting it on two players.
Yeah, but, you know.
Look, I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I just think it's definitely something you have to think about, especially in light of the fact that before the three-point shot, outside shooting wasn't really it was counted, but people didn't shoot outside as much. I mean, there was no incentive to play out there. You think of the great shooters of the 60s or the 70s or even the early 80s with Keith Maravich, Jerry West, Elgin Baylor. I mean, even those guys, there was no three-point shot. So you came in. You shot from 20 feet and in. There was no incentive to shoot far back. I think since the three-point line, I think the best backcourt that I recall probably was I don't know, I mean, Steve Nash and Rajah Bell? I mean,
no.
If you're talking strictly three-pointers, I think they have the top percentage for three-pointers for a combo. I really do. I think that's it. If you're thinking just, I don't know, I mean, I'm having a hard time coming up with pure shooters. Mark Price?
Ron Harper? I think
yeah.
I would take that.
I
think that's comparable because remember at that point Harper was a 20-point-a-game scorer.
Right, but he was a 20-point-a-game driver.
Yes, I understand versus the shooter. I understand the difference. I'd have to – that may be something to do a little bit of research on, or maybe we make it a question of the day. That's a pretty rough call.
We could definitely do that. Okay, so as far as the rest of the NBA playoffs are concerned, the only other real – competitive series is the one taking place with your former team.
Well, there's two. Also, we can't really talk out. Can't really get rid of Atlanta. Tied the Indiana series 2-2. I don't think one game has been on anything but NBA TV. But the Nets come back after a devastating Game 4 loss in Chicago, where they're up 14 with 2.5 minutes to go. And Nate Robinson turned into, I don't know what he turned into. That was one of the greatest
Superman.
Things I've seen. Scored 14
dun.
Points in the last 2 minutes, put the game in overtime, and they would go on to win in triple OT. It's been a fun series. With Heinrich out now, with Rose out, I don't know. I think the Nets got a shot in game six.
Well, the Nets definitely have more talent on the court, as far as I'm concerned. I think you're right. With Heinrich is a big player on that team, especially with Rose out, because he defends the big guard, and being at 6'5", so now he was defending Deron Williams. So now we'll see if Deron Williams can go off. I mean, the interesting thing about the overtime, and I watched some of it. I did DVR the game, so. Thankfully, I put it on like an extra hour because that's how long it needed. So I watched the overtime, and it looked like Deron Williams was just spent from running around after Nate Robinson for the whole fourth quarter.
I was spent just watching people run around trying to catch Nate Robinson. That's also because I'm a fat ass.
Not sure that's a word we can use, but oh well. But, you know, it's funny because we've all seen Nate Robinson do this. I mean, Nate Robinson can go on streaks where he scores, as you said, 18 and a quarter or 20 in a game. I mean, He has the all-time record for the Bulls for most points in one quarter. The Bulls did employ a guy that kind of led the league in scoring for nine years. Probably the best
Bob
player
Love?
Ever, Michael Jordan. What's that?
Oh, him?
Bob Love.
Bob Love.
Bob Love, yeah. Bob Love. And Jerry Sloan. No, one guy, Michael Jordan, who happened to get married. So congratulations to Michael again. but the fact of the matter remains, Nate Robinson turned it on, and they're going to need him to continue that because they're losing more and more players as the series goes on. And if you're P.J. Carlissimo, do you play Gerald Wallace and Reggie Evans in the fourth quarter ever again?
Well, Gerald Wallace did carry them in the fourth quarter a little bit last night. But, yeah, that was not a great – you see, that's what you expect from Reggie Evans. Reggie Evans is a rebounder, enough said. Gerald Wallace is getting $10 million a year to be more than to be able to close games. Inexcusable. The other series, your New York Knickerbockers, unable to sweep, as Michelle Kamen so eloquently stated at an event on Sunday. Once JR was gone, they weren't winning game four. My sister, NBA prophet, hell has frozen over.
Really?
Swear to you.
Wow, I'm going to have to talk to her. That's a good call on her part, but she's right. I mean, I heard one other analyst state this, and I'm not sure it's
well,
too – yeah.
Yeah, you're fading out a little bit. Maybe you were just in
I'm
shock
sure
over my sister talking basketball.
In which he said, could it be that if you polled the NBA personnel and asked which is the most complete player on the Knicks, would J.R. Smith be the guy? And when you lose your most complete player, chances are you're going to lose. So, I mean, Carmelo's the best scorer. We all know that. But I think that J.R. probably is the most complete player on the Knicks. So the question, so your sister said it eloquently, but incredibly insightful. Once J.R. did leave, they weren't going to win. And did you really expect the Knicks to win in four? Boston's pretty prideful, and they did go to overtime. I'm okay with the loss. We'll see what happens tomorrow night. If we're back here next week talking about this before Game 7, that's a bigger problem.
if this discussion goes beyond a dinner Chinese food tomorrow night, we're going to have a problem.
I'd agree with you. I think if we're discussing this tomorrow night at Mr. Kamen's 37th birthday party,
womp,
we will.
Womp.
Oh, come on!
I am. Yes, it's official, ladies and gentlemen. I'm old, but that's okay.
You're old and slow and a fat ass.
That is true. But to be fair, even when I was young, I was slow. I never really a little bit of a fat ass. But then again, fat ass is a relative term. When you're 6'2", when you weigh a little bit over 200, fat ass may not be the right word to use. But, yes, it is my. I will be turning 37 in 4.5 hours. I'm deciding whether to go out for a drink to celebrate this or to sit home. I'm not quite sure yet.
And
so,
anybody that knows Mr. Kamens knows that he will be awake in 7 hours.
Yeah, I'll be probably be
and 8 hours. And
I'll
9 hours and 10 hours.
Anyway.
He might go to bed by 12 hours from now.
Yeah, well, there's a little bit of work that has to be done. Anyway.
If you'd like to celebrate with us, Prohibition tonight, midnight.
Yeah, we'll see. But anyway, going on to the other series, Miami, an easy sweep. We talked
about
the
Milwaukee Bucks.
My Milwaukee Bucks. We talked about the Knicks, the Indiana-Atlanta series is both teams have covered at home. I would be shocked if Atlanta pulled out this series. The Nets-Bulls is going strong at 3-2 with a game, huge game six coming up next week, I think on Thursday night. To the West, Oklahoma City unable to close and Mr. Westbrook out for the year. Unfortunately, having. Now, What is the impact of this long term? Now, we've heard a lot of people, including Skip Bayless from ESPN, has stated that he thinks they're, in many ways, a better team without Russell Westbrook. I don't quite see it that way, but it's going to be interesting to see how Kevin Durant reacts going forward.
Well, my eyes certainly just got wide by that concept. What is this, the Patrick Ewing syndrome that Bill Simmons says? You lose your great player and all of a sudden you become a better team?
Well, the idea was
I don't see it here.
I don't either. The idea was that Westbrook took more shots during the year than Kevin Durant did, and is more of a combo guard than an actual point guard. I have difficulty seeing a team led by Reggie Jackson beating a rejuvenated and a very sharp looking Spurs team in a conference finals.
Well,
but then again, I'll tell you, whoever wins that Denver-Colton State, that is not a good matchup for San Antonio at all.
No, because it's going to be a run-and-gun matchup the entire time. I mean, I think that Kevin Durant's going to see a lot of double and triple teams. I think if this team, let's put it this way, if this happened last year and there was no Westbrook, but you had James Harden, I may play into Skip Bayless's thought process where it may be a better team without Westbrook. But to place all that ball handling on a second-year player out of Boston College who really didn't play the last 2 years, and Kevin Martin, who is not a ball handler at all, talk about a straight shooter. He's as good as they come. Oh, by the way, do TMC go into that discussion of shooting backcourts?
If you yes, as someone who is probably the East Coast's biggest Mitch Richmond fan, the problem is whether you consider Chris Mullin part of a backcourt or not.
No, he's not. He's not part of the backcourt. But I still think then, that maybe Hardaway and Richmond have to be in that discussion.
Yeah, I would think so. But again, Hardaway was more of a driver than a shooter, so you can argue it either way.
Okay, well, that's just the sidebar. But anyway, I think that if you had Harden there and not Westbrook and not Kevin Martin, this is a whole different discussion. But I think you're going to see Kevin Durant, and you already saw it last night, get doubled and triple teamed, and he's going to have to pass out of those to the shooter, which he doesn't have a guy that drives anymore. Reggie Jackson, it's really strange saying Reggie Jackson in a basketball context.
Agreed.
Like, when you first said it the first time, I was like, why are we talking baseball again? But anyway, Naked Gun.
Come on, would I ever talk baseball if I could help it?
Or Naked Gun. I mean, you may be talking to Leslie Nielsen.
Enrico Palazzo. Anyway,
that being said, this just further exemplifies the fact that both of us are old.
Yes.
Is recording a movie from, I believe, 1987.
Agreed. And by the time, as many of you know, by the time we're back on next week, not only will I be 37, Mr. Palmer will be 62. So,
well, my knees feel like they're 90, so there you go.
Yeah.
But I don't have a fat ass.
That is true.
Because I go to the gym.
Yeah. Yes, you do. So Sean will actually be turning 37 on Friday. So happy birthday to us. The other conference series, San Antonio swept a hopeless and helpless Lakers team who really could have taken five guys from the Wayne PAL team and probably put up a better effort. Dwight Howard once again exemplifying why he deserves a max contract, gets thrown out halfway through the third period of game four. Man, I wouldn't give it to him. I know he's going to get it, but
you have to give it to him. If you're the Lakers, you have to give it to them.
But gosh, I don't
want
to. You
have to. And we'll talk about this more when free agency starts in June. But
yeah,
I will put it on the record right now that not only will the Lakers offer it to him, but Dwight Howard will accept it.
Well,
that's my prediction. He says he's going to solicit other offers, but
Houston.
If you would like to make another side wager on this, I am more than willing to put money down. Or anything you'd like.
The problem is this. If he stays, do they keep D'Antoni? Because these two just don't fit. They just don't work together.
Kupchak's already said that they're keeping D'Antoni. So unless Dwight Howard says, I'm not going to play for Mike D'Antoni, which is what he said to Stan Van Gundy, then Howard gets a reputation of being a coach killer. So I guess we'll see that as it plays out. So we have 20 minutes left, and the biggest story of the week we still haven't talked about.
Well, that would, of course, be the Memphis Clippers 2-2 each, correct?
I forgot about that. All right. So
yeah, we all did. We already knew that was going seven. So, yeah, a somewhat big story came out, and I want to give Mr. Palmer some credit for this. When we were talking about it yesterday, when Jason Collins comes out, first athlete, of the big four to come out gay while still an active player. That being said, Sean, what was your point?
Well, my point was it's nice that Jason Collins comes out of the closet. In fact, I give him a lot of credit. He's got a lot of courage, blah, 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 blah. Everybody said this before. But it's a lot different for Jason Collins to come out of the closet. And I hate that, coming out of the closet. To pronounce that he's gay, a homosexual, than it would anybody else, a star athlete. And this has been stated many times on the radio, many times written, but I did say this yesterday morning to Seth. Jason Collins is at the end of his career. He's one of those locker room guys. He's 7 feet tall. It's kind of like a lefty in baseball. He'll always have a job. But will he really have a job? And if he doesn't have a job next year in the NBA, people will say, oh, well, he didn't get a job because he was gay. Or he said that he was gay. I don't see this as a huge deal. I see it as a pretty big deal. But at the same point, if he doesn't get a job next year, does this just fade away? And I think the answer is yes. So
yeah,
I understand it. I appreciate it. I think Sports Illustrated has a great story on their hands. And I love the fact that this isn't such a big deal more than it is. I mean, you and I are making it a bigger deal by talking about it a lot more. But at the same point, I've only read maybe 4 or 5 dissenting opinions in sports around this. And not that you really can. Chris Broussard being the biggest one.
The what response?
Chris Broussard. Did you happen to hear that?
I did. Well, there was the Chris Broussard response, which was, it's a sin. My personal favorite was Mike Wallace's response.
Oh, yeah.
Which was, dude, you could be hitting all these women, and instead you're going, I don't understand. No, Mike, you certainly don't. But luckily, you have $60 million.
SMH, which he tweeted SMH, which I had to look up in the Urban Dictionary because I had no idea what it meant. It means shaking my head.
Everyone else knows
that. And I have to say, Larry Johnson does make a very valid point. I don't agree with it, but it makes a valid point. He said, I would not feel comfortable with a homosexual in the locker room with me. And when questioned, and I don't agree with everything that Larry Johnson has said, but I think he does make a valid point. In the last sentence that he says on Twitter, he goes, you know what? This is a man that is attracted to other men. So he's in a locker room where everybody is naked. Would I be allowed in a woman's locker room naked? And if not, why not? If the standard is the same, I don't understand why I can't be in a women's locker room naked with them.
Interesting.
What's your take on that?
Well, I have to think about it. I don't have an instant reaction to it. I think it's an interesting premise. Um,
Like I said, I don't agree with the concept of that. I don't feel comfortable with the naked homosexual man. I don't agree with that concept, but I do understand his point of view when he makes a claim like that, because there's no way that Larry Johnson can go into the LA Sparks locker room naked and just stand around.
Well, on the other hand, there's a good chance out of whatever at the NBA, WNBA over the years, that they're not attracted to him. So it's okay.
Well put, but you get the point.
Yes, I do. I want to give Eric, one of our readers or listeners, Eric from New Jersey, or I guess originally from New York, now in New Jersey, was saying, look, you know, a lot of this could, you know, this is a very well-spoken guy. He's going to make a lot of, you know, this is somewhere at the end of his career. Now, how much of this is for financial gain? You're going to get book deals. You're going to get speaking engagements. You know, is that a secondary motive for this?
I got to tell you, it was the first thing I thought of.
Yeah.
I think it's an incredibly valid point. Eric, I agree with you. I think it was the first thing I thought of was that this guy, if he doesn't get signed to a contract next year, people will say it's because he's gay, and then somebody will sign him to a contract for that same reason. And Mark Stein of ESPN polled 14 GMs, and I believe seven of them said that they would sign him, or seven of them said that there would be a spot in the NBA for him next year, and seven of them said no. And when asked about the seven that said no, they said it has nothing to do with his homosexuality. He's done. So that's what I was saying at the very beginning of this discussion is, it's a whole lot different if, say, I'm obviously making this up because I don't know anything, but if LeBron James said, I'm a homosexual, or even, let's say, Kawhi Leonard, who's 24 years old and on the uptick of his career. He's not hanging on by a thread, which is what Jason Collins basically is doing right now. His NBA career is hanging on by a thread.
Yeah, but what I do think this does is it does kind of give an introduction in. And there have been rumors, and I've heard a couple of names, none of which I'm actually going to repeat on here, about four or five NFL players that are going to come out collectively. And it may be easier, you know, coming out in this, you know, coming out even if someone's already broken the glass ceiling on it, let alone, regardless of whether he plays again, at least it's been done. You know, I also think there are certain sports, I think hockey would actually be the easiest to break this in, because of the lifestyles of the players that are in it. So many of them are from Europe, where this is more accepted. You know, I think it would be a little bit tougher in baseball. I don't know how well that would go over. In basketball and football, I'm a little mixed. I mean, I'm not mixed in my opinion of it, but I'm a little mixed on how the reaction will be when it is a guy who's 27, 28 years old in the midst of his career and going forward from there.
Well, I think football would definitely be the worst of all of them. Football, you have over 50 guys in the locker room, so there's obviously more opinions than elsewhere. And everybody is entitled to their opinion. Don't get me wrong. I don't think that there's anything wrong with what Chris Broussard said. That's his opinion. That's his opinion based on his faith. Do I agree with his opinion? Absolutely not. And for those that don't know what he said, and I'm paraphrasing here, he said he was asked a question about religion. He was asked, is Jason Collins a Christian in the belief? I'm not Christian, so this is kind of hard for me to say, but is he a full-fledged Christian, I guess is kind of the concept. And Jason Broussard said, according to the Bible, homosexuality is a sin. So if homosexuality is a sin, he's a sinner, and anybody living with a man is a sinner according to the Bible. Okay. He didn't say that he wasn't a sinner. He didn't say that anybody else isn't a sinner. He just said that is a sin. And if that's his belief, I have to respect it. I don't agree with it, and I don't think anybody does. Now, I think I don't think the majority of the people do. I think what will be interesting is, does Chris Broussard, because of all of this hubbub, does he lose his job based on this? And if he does, can he stand behind the First Amendment?
There have been issues with Chris Broussard over the last year or two where I don't think this would be the mitigating factor in doing so. I don't think ESPN is going to get rid of him. But there have been, and I'd have to redo some research on this. I don't remember it off the top of my head. But I believe that there have been some issues with him in the past. There was an article that was not plagiarized, but they said one or two big problems in the last couple of years. So I wouldn't be shocked if he wasn't resigned. I agree with you. It's certainly not a popular view. It's certainly not my view. And, you know, that may be one of the big issues in football. So many of the football players are born-again Christians in Southern Baptist, where this is not particularly
a respected opinion.
Yeah, it's frowned upon.
Yeah, that's a good way of stating it. But go ahead.
No, but I don't think he'll lose his job. And, well, I don't think that will be the reason. But look, you know, ESPN fired, you know, Rob Parker for the RG3 not black enough to the barbershop comments. So, you know, and who knows what happens. And, you know, we'll figure that out. So we have about 8 minutes. Do we want to hit quickly on the NHL playoffs?
Sure. We should do that, considering that we don't have Mr. Keegan Reid on this week. We hope to have him on next week. We will try. Keegan had a death in the family, and maybe in his extended family, but he was unable to join us today. So the Islanders make the playoffs. The Rangers make the playoffs. And the Devils do not, which is kind of surprising from the last 20 years of my existence anyway. So at the beginning of this year, I picked the Rangers. I believe I picked the Rangers and the Kings in the finals. I will not be going with that prediction anymore. The Rangers have not played extraordinarily well. They snuck in. They're the sixth seed. They play against the Capitals, which they seem to play every single year. They've played the last 3 years against the Capitals, and this starts Thursday night, the NHL playoffs. I have to say, I am invigorated by the NHL again. Tonight we start with Minnesota and Chicago, LA and St. Louis, and Detroit, who just snuck in by the skin of their teeth against Anaheim. So I know you were very impressed with Chicago's earlier run, 23 straight games. It's kind of hard not to be impressed by that.
I was impressed.
I said it was kind of hard not to be impressed by that. I was impressed as well. I said, but you were. I was addressing you. Man, you're getting real cranky in your old age.
Damn straight.
Anyway,
do you think
Chicago's going to make it?
I had them losing in the finals to Pittsburgh. So, to be perfectly honest, it's kind of hard to go away from them. I am obviously a little bit scared of whoever comes out of the 4-5 St. Louis, Los Angeles, which is just an absolute killer first-round matchup. I will stick with Chicago. I will stick with Pittsburgh, partially because that's who I chose in the beginning of the year, and there doesn't seem much of a reason to change it.
I see that. I mean, I love the Eastern round matchups, the Eastern Conference matchups. I absolutely love them. I think that the Maple Leafs against the Bruins, Ottawa against Montreal, Pittsburgh against the Islanders, Washington against the Rangers. I mean, these are old-time matchups. I love Boston against Toronto, like just as a matchup. Like, original six, bring them on.
Now, what's fun about it is, as you said, it's a combination of original six and Canadian teams.
Islanders.
Yep. Yeah. But either way, definitely good hockey going on, and hockey shall return to the playoffs at the National Veterans Memorial Coliseum for the final time.
Yeah, and if we, as the last memorable moment that I can think of in Islanders history was a first-round matchup in 1994 where they played the two-time defending champions, the Pittsburgh Penguins, as I believe a 1-8 seed. Maybe it was 93. And they would beat on a David Vollant goal in overtime of Game 7. They would stun the Penguins.
I am shocked that you remember that.
I actually do. I remember where I was when they scored the goal. I'm right, aren't I?
I'm looking up the date, but I am shocked that you knew that. May 15th, 1993.
How good am I?
So the 92-93 series. It was after the Penguins won. I'm looking if it was the first round. No, it was the second round. The first round, the Islanders, it was the second round because this was the Patrick Division Finals. They had that's when they were in divisions and they went one against four and two against three, and then this was the final. So, but well done, sir. The two-time defending champion Pittsburgh Penguins went down to David Vollant in overtime, and I was on Michael Glazer's couch in a basement with a bunch of my friends that we could not believe it. And then I went to the Canadians games and saw them lose.
Maybe
I should just stay away from the Coliseum.
Yeah, I was actually driving. I remember I was in a car in Wayne, my hometown. And I remember hearing that on the radio because I didn't really care enough to watch. I was just like, wow, didn't see that coming. For those of you who question my hockey knowledge, to be perfectly fair, if you've ever seen me on Stump the Schwab, the first question is hockey, and I beat the Schwab. So I do have some knowledge here, as much as everyone likes to make fun of me on that.
With 3 minutes left, I'd like to ask you one more question, and then you can end this since it is your first. You get the primary birthday.
Okay.
How long ago was Stump the Schwab?
I can't count that far ago.
All righty then. That's all we're saying. We question your hockey knowledge based on the fact that since then you've probably picked up very little.
That is true. Unfortunately, I've picked up seven other licenses where my brain
has
had
but none
needle.
In hockey, none in the NHL.
No.
Okay.
No.
So I've 2 minutes left. I'd like to say a very happy birthday to my co-host. And I will see you at Prohibition at midnight tonight.
Aw, thank you. Okay. Happy birthday to Sean. For anyone going to Keats on Friday night, we'll have fun.
We'll get to
one other shout out. As usual, I give it to the more obscure sports. Very cool happening last Saturday night. Guy named Sergio Martinez, who left Argentina 10 years ago to kind of get his fame and glory as a professional boxer, had his first homecoming bout in front of 50,000 people as the world middleweight champion. Probably should have lost the fight. He's 38 years old. He looked a little bit beat up. But it was a pretty amazing – I highly advise anyone who wants to see something. He was pretty much crying walking to the aisle for the ovation that he got. If you ever want to see something pretty cool, watch the on demand on HBO – the 5 minutes of entry, heat, in the applause, in the middle of the pouring rain, as he walks to the arena. You want to know why sports is great? That's it. Check it out. And that's it for this week. Next week, probably hit a little bit more on the playoffs, and probably touch on baseball a little bit. Damn.
Absolutely.
For Sean Palmer, Seth Kamens, happy birthday to both of us. Have a good night, everybody.
Happy birthday. See ya.